Welcome to the Writer's Well podcast, conversations about writing from craft to wellness with Rachel Herron and Jay Thorne. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm fighting a migraine, so we're doing this a little bit early, but I really am just very pleased to see you.
Likewise. Yeah. I'm glad we could knock this out early and maybe get you some rest so that you'll be 100% for your class tonight.
Yes, I would really like that. It's almost over and I love this class, but I'm also ready for it to be over. Get my Mondays back.
Yeah, know the feeling.
I know you do. So how has your week been?
Good. Yeah, just kind of plugging along. I do have an exciting announcement I'm going to make here in a minute. Not major, but something I'm really excited about that I've been working on since July.
Do I know about this?
Yeah, you do.
I do. Yeah. Oh, this is a big, cool announcement.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. So I'm going to, we'll talk. Let's do our business. And then before we get into the question, I'll talk about it.
Okay, perfect. Business-wise, no new patrons, but you can always come support us over at patreon.com/thewritersweel. We have some cool ass shit over there.
We certainly do. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, sorry. Again, I'm a huge slacker on the comments here because I thought I was going to get to them in the next hour. And instead, we're meeting early because you're kind to me. So why don't you tell me about the comments?
Yeah, that's all right. We're going to go over them. They were a little bit light. I think the holiday week in the U.S. specifically.
Also, it's a hard question.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was episode 151. The question was, what do you do about long-term disability insurance?
Which, besides, you know, freak out the entire world.
That is a sexy question, let me tell you.
That's a sexy little number I like to pull out.
Oh, nice. Christopher chimed in, of course, with first comments, talked about how great the NHS and his welfare state is, saying it's not perfect, but that it works pretty well. So good for him. And he also said that reminded me that Joanna lived in New Zealand for a while. So maybe you should talk to Joanna about being a Kiwi.
That's true. And her husband is a Kiwi. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Forgot about that, huh?
So, yeah, I did.
We had Eliza who said, I was like, when I first read this, I was like, seriously? She said, this conversation is timely because I was having the conversation with another writer earlier this week.
Okay. Thank you, Eliza. At least I'm not the only freak worried about this.
Yeah. She said too that, you know, these types of things are so hard because there's so many variables and uncertainties and there's fear around it and it's, you know, hard to make the right decision. So definitely recognize that. I think that is certainly true. Edwin said, as a Canadian, it's a hard question to navigate. They have acute care medical system. Once you've moved into long-term disability, things go downhill fast for people who lack a PhD in government paperwork. So it sounds like they do have some options there for Canadians, but our friends north of the border must struggle with the bureaucracy of that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Kane in all caps. This has been on my mind for years. And she also said, I still haven't done anything about it.
I think that's the easiest thing to do about it, honestly.
It's paralyzing, you know.
It is. That's exactly what I've done since our chat. Nothing. Yeah.
Rebecca Bryan chimed in and was taking solace in my misery. She said, Bahaha, holy shit. I so needed that laugh today. Jay, you strike me as someone who's kind of always got his shit together, so I felt oddly comforted that you have your moments too. So for those of you who are listening, the update is that I think I pulled off the water caper of the century. I don't think anyone in the household knew that I sprayed the water jets all over the walls.
Your wife never found out?
No.
I was telling my wife at dinner that night, and she's like, that is hilarious. And especially my favorite part is you tracking steps onto the mat. Yeah. So it looks
deep. Yeah, the bath mat just looked too clean. I'm like, this will not fly.
Absolutely the best.
Jenny chimed in and she said, I hope it was dry in the 6 hours and that you told her what happened. Well, I didn't, Jenny.
You know, if she listened to the podcast, she'd know everything. So.
Someday I will tell her, just not now.
It's like a year. You got a year. You need a year on that one.
Yes, you need some laugh time on that one.
Exactly.
Yeah,
too although soon. I will point out on that, if you guys are not on Jay's writer email list, it's so good. And the one that you sent out this weekend about, you know, you got stung by a hornet or a wasp.
Yellow jacket.
By a wasp, yeah. Yellow jacket, that's even worse. And your wife's response was to fall over laughing.
Yeah.
And you admitted that that would be your response,
I would
too.
Have done the same thing. Yeah, she hopped up and down on one leg saying, a bee is stinging me in my shoe. I would have been on the ground laughing, no doubt. So I can't be upset about that.
Your relationship. I really love that.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It's like, yeah, it's all you need to know, really.
Okay.
All right, so that was it for comments. Like I said, a little bit light. I think the holiday week might have something to do with that and the nature of the question. But good to thank you to everyone who chimes in there with comments. We appreciate the engagement, and yeah,
we appreciate, you know, it's all the holidays and stuff, you know, but we appreciate y'all so much for just being around,
yeah,
and listening and being patrons and leaving comments, or just, you know, if you're quietly listening in your car and you have never reached out once, we appreciate you too, yeah, so much.
Yeah, we do. All right, cool. Well, apologies to those of you who are going to listen to the beginning of the Career Author tomorrow and hear the same thing. But I had to talk about this because I'm really excited about it. And Rachel, you've known about it since July.
Yep.
In New York City at Thriller Fest, I met J.D. Barker, a international best-selling author. If you don't know who he is, he co-wrote the prequel to Dracula with Dacre Stoker, Bram Stoker's great-great nephew or grandnephew, something like that. Phenomenal international bestseller. Just the guy's a real inspiration. I've been a fan of his for a long time. And we decided to do a podcast together. And people, every time I talk to Joanna about podcasts, she's like, so have you started another one yet? So the answer is going to be yes. But this makes sense because people are like, wait a minute, you already do three technically. All right. So this is going to be the fourth one, but this is going to be an interview podcast, and I don't have an interview format podcast.
Oh, you know what? On my podcast, How Do You Write? I love the interview format. It takes all the pressure off you and puts it completely on them. And it's, I think you're going to love it.
Well, what I really love about interview format is I get to learn.
Yes, like, exactly.
You know, because what we're going to do, JD has a lot going on. So we're setting this up in the self-publishing formula, Mark Dawson / James Blatch format, in that I am going to be the person doing all the interviews and JD is going to bookend the episode, and we're going to kind of talk about takeaways and stuff. So it's been really great. I've already banked 12 or 13 episodes, and it's been amazing. I'm learning a ton of stuff. But there was sort of something else that came out of it, and JD was so gracious. I wanted to mention this here because I think a lot of our listeners might find this really intriguing. In the process of listening to all of my podcasts, he listened to the Is It Worth It episode that we did not too long ago, and he's like, so are you still queering? And I'm like, well, sort of. Like, I kind of know what I'm going to do now. I'm kind of in this, you know, weird gray area because I didn't get like any serious bites from New York. And he was like, well, I love mentoring. I've helped people with this. I would love to help you if you would accept that. And I was like, of course I will. So he's like, I will sort of coach you. And because like, I know what agents are looking for. I know what acquiring editors are looking for. I know what turns them off, what like pushes their buttons. He's like, I can guide you through this process. He's like, if you're willing, we could talk about it for a few minutes every week on the podcast so that other people could kind of learn the process if they wanted to, you know, query agents and head down that traditional path. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that sounds amazing. And so I sent him my manuscript, and and he came back with like there was a ton of red all over. He's like, okay. He's like, you got a lot of problems here. He's like, there are a lot of red flags that are going to cause an agent to just immediately bail on this query. So we got to back up and start with that. So we're going to go through the manuscript chapter by chapter and get it up to speed before we kind of resume the querying process. So he told me kind of like put a pause on that. He's going to help me get the manuscript to where it needs to be. And then we're gonna take it out from there. So
holy shit, how cool is that?
I mean, it's so nice for him to do that, you know?
Could that be any sweeter for you? But I kind of do love it. Like, I know that you are taking on the onus of responsibility for the interviewing, and this is kind of almost like your treat given back, but it's so beautiful of him to offer that time.
I know.
And I wanna point out too, this is like when people always ask me, what do you do at conferences? What you do, I don't care about any presentation at any conference. Yeah. I don't care about any of the parties. Yeah. It's about who you meet and who you connect with, and not in a sleazy, schmoozy, you know, elbow rubbing way, but who do you actually shake hands with and connect with and have a good conversation with, who becomes a friend? Because it sounds like you two have become friends because you went to Thriller Fest.
Yeah. And we got to talk there, and he was getting pulled in a million different directions.
I bet he was.
And he gave me time, and I'm just so thankful. And I told him too, I was like, this podcast thing, just show up. That's all you got to do. Like I'll do everything else. I'll do all the scheduling, the interviews. Like, you know, I wanted to make it as easy on him as I could, because I thought, and the reason I asked him in the first place is I heard him on Mark Dawson's podcast a number of times. And like you, he's one of the few people in our circles who live in both worlds. He's a hybrid. He's independently published and traditionally published with one of the big five. And he understands both, and he doesn't make judgments about either. And I think that's really rare. Like you. Yes. Yeah. So I'm really excited about it. Like I said, I'm so grateful that he was willing to help me out like that.
And also, this will help so many other people out.
It will.
You're producing a podcast that will give value, which, you know, is not true of all podcasts nowadays.
No, and I told Zach another reason this is really important to me. It's honestly secondary, but it still is important to me, is that I can't be full of shit. Like, I run mastermind groups. I do coaching. I do developmental editing. I have to be the student too. I have to model that same behavior. And no matter how good you are or how good you think you are, there's always somebody better, someone you can learn from. So I'm really excited for this opportunity to learn from JD and show my students and my mastermind people that, like, it never stops. It's a nice circle of give back.
We always have to be learning from each other and from mentors. Yeah. But you have missed telling us what it is called.
Oh, yes. Small detail.
Marketer.
God, we're so terrible.
When does it go live?
All right. Well, it is the official launch is going to be December 9th, Monday, December 9th. It'll come out every Monday. It's called Writers Inc. Podcast. That's Inc., I-N-K, a little play on words there, because the subtitle is The Business of Writing. So a lot of the interviews are going to focus more on the marketing platform business side, more so than craft, although there will be some craft stuff that comes up. But that's it. So it's the writersincpodcast.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. It'll be trickling out into iTunes and the other places during the week, so you might see it earlier, but it's like a soft launch, because you know you can never get iTunes to like publish it on a specific day when you launch the podcast. Right. But official launch will be December 9th at writersincpodcast.com.
A little annoyed that I have to add another podcast to what I need. Sorry. To listen to. I can't miss this one. I cannot.
Well, and I'll give folks a little teaser just so they know. We're releasing episode 0 and 1 together. 0 is like the little 10-minute intro. 1 is me interviewing JD. Episode 2 is JD interviewing me. And then episode 3 is Hugh Howey. So we're kind of starting off with a bang.
You know, I love listening to Hugh Howey on podcasts.
He's so good.
Always, he's so inspirational, and he doesn't pull any punches. Yes. You know, he really says it how it is. And I just adore that. I've never read his books, but I love him as a human.
Yeah. Wool is one of my favorite post-apoc series. And I've read Halfway Home is a great book of his. And he's another guy who's so gracious. Like he looked at, like the first 4 chapters of a book for me one time on a cold email, because
oh my god,
yeah, because my main character lives on a boat, and so I was like, oh, you know, and I didn't even expect to hear back from him, and not only did I hear back from him, but he read it and gave me feedback. So I you know, it's really great to like celebrate people like that in our industry who are so giving and gracious with their time.
That is so awesome. Writers Inc.
Yes.
Our new Raiders favorite Inc. podcast. Can't wait.
All right. So enough of that. Let's get into the question of the week.
Okay.
And it's almost like I knew you were going to get a migraine. I don't know.
Oh, it's a softball. I hope it's a softball.
I think it is a softball. Here's the question. It's pretty simple. How do you boost your mood?
Ooh. This is so good. There's a new podcast, speaking of podcasts that people should be listening to, there's one called The Happiness Lab.
Yeah.
And it is a, I might have mentioned it somewhere else, but it is a, I think she's a neurologist. She teaches at Yale. So she's smart. She's got the goods. And it's a scientific look at happiness. And we've all seen these things before. We've read them, you know, we've read Gretchen Rubin's book or whatever. You know,
this is Dr. Lori Santos.
Dr. Lori Santos. That's right. Yes. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But she just has such a lovely way of looking at happiness and what it is and what it means. And I might answer this in a really kind of bare and brazen way, actually, when I think about it. So
go for it.
So there is a recovery group that I'm a member of that I am not allowed to name, but you might know what it is.
I'm glad you're going there, because that's where I was going to go to.
Really?
Yes, I'm so glad you went there.
Okay.
I didn't want to prompt you, but
this recovery group, which is a secret society, which I will not name, but you can join it. You know, you can guess what it is. I have little chips from it. they talk a lot about prayer and meditation, helping others, having a purpose, and oh gosh, what's the other one? There's another, gratitude.
Yeah.
And it turns out that scientifically, nothing makes us happier than those things. Like money will help us if we're going from like anywhere up to $75,000. Yes. After $75,000, whatever we make, it does not make us happier.
Right.
And whatever you do with money, you tend to do the same thing with money if you have more of it. If you're not a saver now, you're not going to be a saver then. All of those kind of things. The things that we think will make us happier just don't. And she put it really well in the podcast that I was just listening to the other day. She goes, you know, as we are growing up, the more we get of something, the more it does make us happy. Mm-hmm. Up to a point. So we have learned on a real basic level that if we move from making $25,000 at a job to making $35,000 at a job, it means we can afford heat.
Yeah.
Right. So that makes us happier. And it programs our mind to think the more we have of something, when you go from a car that doesn't run every other day to a car that works every day, you get happier. And you think that with a newer car, you'll be even more happy. But it's all untrue. The things that really make us happy are meditation of some sort, doing service for others, being of some kind of service to another human being, having a purpose. So having a purpose and gratitude. So to bring it all back to writing, writing to me is a meditation. So that mm-hmm. boosts my spirits automatically. If I, you know, not even talking about regular meditation, talking about writing as a meditation, being of service to others. I love doing this. This show boosts my mood. When I said, you know, can we do a little bit early? Cause I might want to go lie down and bury my head under the cover. I was so happy about that. I knew this would make me feel better. Helping others in the writing community is literally my favorite thing to do, sometimes more than writing, which is dangerous, but it is true. Having a purpose. There are so many people who don't know what their purpose on this earth is. And I think that as writers, we have this special gift that we know if we get our words on the page, and it's egotistical and all of those things, but maybe we would help one other person. If we help one other person, it's worth it, right? That's an enormous goal. And gratitude is one of those stupid things that, yeah, I'll make a gratitude list. I'll write down, you know, my sponsor makes me write five things that I'm grateful for. And when I write down five things that I'm grateful for, I'm rolling my eyes, yes. But two, I always feel better. Yeah. I always feel better. And I like to, one of my friends the other day said that if it's a really bad day, she just looks at where she is. And she says, what is holding me up right now? I am grateful to this chair. I am grateful to the person who designed this chair. I'm grateful for the person who put together the fabric that went on this chair in the factory. You know, the person who went and got the polymer for the plastic or whatever these things are made out of. You can start gratitude at as small a space as that. And just saying that just made me feel very grateful for this chair.
Yes.
So I feel better now than I did before you asked the question. So those Great. Are the things I do to boost my mood. The things that I, the actual physical things that I do to boost my mood, often are things that involve like walking outside or anything with water. If I can put mm-hmm. my body in water in any way or on water, that helps. And also candy, but that's not good. Candy sometimes contributes to the headache problem. And it doesn't actually boost my mood. That brings me down later.
Yeah.
So, but you know, good food, good living, all of that stuff. But in terms of writing, those are it all comes down to the same thing. How can we help? And how can we be sure that we are in the place that we should be?
Well, and I like that you framed that from the reference point of being in recovery, because I think for a lot of people, and both of us included in our past, we look to substances or to do that. And it's a dangerous game to play, and it isn't one that you can necessarily win. And I think that's important to note.
I love that you said that, because up until, you know, 2 years ago, that was absolutely how I changed my mood. Whenever I was never comfortable with the mood I was in, and I always wanted to alter it in some way. I wanted to be sleepier than I was, or I wanted to be more awake than I was. I wanted to be more mellow than I was. And I was never able to sit with discomfort in my body. If I had discomfort in my body or in my mind, and I'm nervous or whatever, there's something I could take or do that would take that edge off and make me feel happier.
Yeah.
And now that I do not have anything of that to reach for, I just have none of it anymore, except for sugar, which I really try to watch because I use it in that way. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I really do. And now that I don't have that, I'm learning the actual methods of happiness, like the actual ways to do it, which are the things that I mentioned. How about you?
Yeah, a lot of the same. The pillars of sort of good living, no surprise, they come up over and over again. So for me, you know, eating right, getting enough sleep, exercising, meditating, having a purpose, like all of those things naturally boost mood. And I can, I'm pretty excited because I have a follow-up appointment with my doctor at the clinic coming up in a few weeks. And it's almost 2 years to the day from when I went to the first doctor who told me I would just have to be on medication the rest of my life for my condition and that, you know, there was nothing I could do about it. And here I am 2 years later and I've never felt better. I mean, I've never had more energy. I feel better now than I did when I was in my 20s because I got all that other stuff right. And it was a bitch and it took a long time and it took a lot of effort and discipline, and I have to stay disciplined and I can't fall off the wagon on any one of those things. But now, day in and day out, I just feel good all the time. And I didn't
realize that we had, we're both at like 2 years of that. We both came to these pivotal shifts at around the same time.
Yeah, it was. It was around the same time. Yeah. And I'm sure like you, like once you get some distance from it and you think back, you don't realize in the moment how sick you are until you're healthy. And then
how terrible you feel.
Yes. And you think, I think back and like, you know, I would get home from work and at 4:30, I was sitting on the couch, like dozing off. Like that should not have been happening, you know, especially in my 30s. Like that was indicative of a lifestyle I was leading that wasn't healthy. And, so I think that like overall, that's my answer. But I also had this little thing that I noticed over the past 6 months or so. It's not going to like shock you, but it's a little thing that I'm so surprised it's been off my radar for so long. Now, do you drink coffee on a regular basis?
I do not.
Okay. Yeah. So this could be something that could benefit you. Do you like coffee?
Love it. But I, in order to like suppress the cortisol response and stuff, I've just gotten caffeine out of my system as well.
Okay.
I just have nothing except sugar, which I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
All right. So I can't wait to hear what you're going to say about this.
I love coffee too. I used to think that I needed coffee to get started in the morning, and that if people believe that, you're fooling yourself. That is not true, because if you have coffee every day, its effects are minimal on your body has adjusted. And unless you're drinking like four pots and you keep adding a pot every month, like it's not helping.
Right.
It's a habit now, right? And maybe placebo effect, you believe it's pepping you up, but coffee is not the way to get you going in the morning. But I love coffee. I love coffee culture. I love the taste of coffee. I love the coffee experience. So I switched to Swiss Water decaf years ago. And
it's
Swiss Water processed. It's a way of creating decaf where they don't use chemicals to strip the caffeine from the coffee bean.
Oh, I have to Google that later.
Yeah, it's supposedly better for you because they just soak the beans in water, and over time it leaches the caffeine out.
And it still tastes like coffee?
Yeah, it still tastes great. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, just Swiss Water process is what it's called if you look for it. So I switched to that, and I've been enjoying my decaf coffee. And I forget, maybe I was out with Zach somewhere or was on a trip or something and they didn't have decaf. And I was like, all right, I'll just get a regular latte. And what I noticed was that one cup of coffee after not having caffeine for months or possibly years was was truly a mood booster. Like I got this surge, not of energy, but of like euphoria, like yes. positive thinking. And it was like, and I was like, I felt more like I was more productive and I was like, oh, this is good. And now after about an hour or so, I felt it kind of taper off and then it was gone. And I was like, that's how responsible caffeine use is supposed to be. Like not doing that every single day because then it doesn't have the effect. But I thought, once or twice a month, I can have a, like if I'm feeling like particularly down or lethargic, or maybe my brain isn't quite firing the way I want it to, if I have just a single cup of coffee, that little thing, just that little bit of caffeine can make a difference. And I feel so much more responsible using it that way, as opposed to just chugging coffee, you know, cup after cup every single day.
The reason I'm grinning so hard is that I have found the exact same thing. Also, it's one of those things that can help me avoid a migraine. So I will, like, I think a migraine's coming, I get to have some coffee. Or just in the afternoon, you know, to have that, you know, once a month or once every 2 months, that charge, and it does feel euphoric. And I know we're already kind of long today, but I want to say that I read this book called Never Enough, which was amazing. And it talks about our brain's desire to always bring us to stasis.
Yes.
So if you drink at 5 o'clock every day, your body knows that at 5 o'clock, you're going to be depressing your body.
Yep.
So in order to alleviate that, it starts to ratchet you up and make you more anxious the closer to five it gets, because it knows you're going to bring it down. And that means it's reaching stasis. And if you are addicted to caffeine, you are sluggish and sleepy because it knows you're going to add a speeder, you know, a speedy substance to it. So you are more tired because it wants to reach stasis when you have your 7 o'clock cup of coffee. And, you know, it's one of the fastest substances to get addicted to. It might be the fastest substance you can get addicted to and the fastest to break. So 5 days later, you wake up and all of a sudden you feel as if you've had coffee. You're just back at your stasis, which is what the coffee was bringing you to after leading you down for a while. Does that make sense?
I
said that very sloppily.
No. Yeah, I get it. Your body adjusts. It's like, it's why people overdose on heroin and cocaine.
Yes.
It's because it's that they're chasing that first high, and it's not quite that severe with coffee, but like that's the concept.
Right. And this woman did her doctoral thesis on the fact that if you drink every day at five, if you have one Manhattan every day at five, you get a certain blood alcohol content. Have we talked about this before?
No, I don't think so.
You get a certain blood alcohol content. So say I had one Manhattan at five and it brought me to a 0.04 blood alcohol content. If I did that every day at five, if somebody hands me a Manhattan in the office at 3 p.m., I will have like a 0.05 or a point or whatever. Yeah. 0.06. You'll have a higher blood alcohol content because your body has not been making you jittery so that it can bring it down. Your body wasn't expecting it. You'll actually get more drunk legally on a drink that you have at a time that your body's not preparing for.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening with coffee. So, and we are not here to coffee shame.
Most
of the people listening will be coffee lovers and coffee drinkers all day, but it is a good mood booster if you're not using it.
Yeah. And you have to understand that if you're using it every day, you're not gaining its benefits.
It's not a mood booster anymore. It's a net zero.
Yes.
It's just bringing you back to brain stasis,
which might be fine for some people. And that, you know, that's fine. But like for, I think we're hypersensitive to it because caffeine is a substance and it's an addictive one. And
you know, do you have this thought every time I do have that latte in the afternoon once a month, I'm like, oh, I should go back to coffee every morning.
Yeah.
And then every single time I talk myself, no, this is why that won't work.
No, I exactly. And that was the realization I had, was like, oh, if I do this every day, I'm not going to get this. But if I do this occasionally, I will.
Now I want a coffee. And I'm fighting a headache. So I think
you can have one then. Yeah.
Actually, the medicine that I take for it has so much caffeine in it, which is why I'm speaking even more quickly than normal, probably. So I hope I've been making sense.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
A fantastic question.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah.
I love that. And this will be great for listeners to answer.
Yeah. How do you boost your mood? Come on over to our website and let us know. Leave us a comment at thewriterswell.org. And thanks. Yeah, we're really curious to hear what you do. Hopefully you keep it legal and clean over there, though.
Well, you know what? We don't give a shit. Really.
We really don't. No.
We don't care what you do. Be safe. All of that. And congrats to you on the Writers Inc.
Thank you.
Can't wait to subscribe and listen. That's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. Can't wait. Can't wait for that to come out and share that with people.
Take care, my friend.
Bye.